Coming up on Tech News Today, Apple Watch 3 has a few LTE issues. Nest has a whole bunch of new products. Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg promises changes to its ad targeting system. And rumors of Google buying HTC are intensifying. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1857, recorded Wednesday, September 20th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/TNT and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we tell you the tech news and we use you as a clearinghouse for our ideas that we have for new apps. Today we're testing out an app called John DenVR, John Denver. Mm-hmm. If you like it, let us know. We're not exactly sure, but it's some sort of VR, including John Denver, the late John Denver.
That's all we know is that the name is creating the product, John DenVR. Yeah.
So let us know what you think. That's part of the show today.
Yeah, and we're thinking it could be a guitar, instructional guitar experience, and that could be G-U-I-T and then capital A-R, because you could place John DenVR on your table with a guitar in his hand, showing you how to play. It's a total immersive John Denver experience. It's the experience we've always wanted.
Right. I mean, we love our jobs, but, you know, just in case, we always have an out with a John DenVR.
It's good to have options.
All right. Whoa. Shall we get to the news? I'm Megan Maroney.
Oh, I'm Jason Hell. Yes, let's get to the news, Megan Maroney.
The Apple Watch Series 3 with cellular is out. The reviews are also out today. It's about time. Get it? Time.
That was good.
Many reviewers, including friend of the show, Serenity Caldwell, ran into some LTE problems, which Apple confirms, and which Serenity calls an existing Wi-Fi bug that prevents the watch from connecting to networks. The software bug makes your watch attempt to connect to public Wi-Fi networks that require login prompts or terms of service agreements, like the ones you might have seen at Starbucks or McDonald's. Your watch can't actually connect to these on its own, but it doesn't stop them from thinking that they are connected and then not connecting to available LTE networks. For the average person, this just means, hey, I just bought this $500 watch and it doesn't work like it's supposed to. Apple told Lauren Good at The Verge that they're exploring a software fix. As Serenity also points out, this would not be a problem if Apple let us authenticate Wi-Fi networks locally on the Apple Watch with dictation. They do not do that yet, but they might in the future. So there's some other features that that people are coming up against. You can't connect to a new Wi-Fi network on your watch unless your iPhone is present and connect to it. So you can connect to, you're ideally supposed to connect to any cell network when you're out in the world. Mm-hmm. Your cell network. The watch tries to save battery. That's why it's doing this. So it always is connecting to Wi-Fi instead of cellular. So that's what it's aiming for when it can connect to the Wi-Fi. So not all of the reviewers had this problem. Serenity had it, and Lauren Good from The Verge had it, but then John Gruber during Firewall, he also had a review unit of the watch, and he didn't have this problem. And also Nicole Nguyen at BuzzFeed also didn't have this problem.
Well, at least there's that. The unfortunate thing is today's the day that the embargoes lift. These are the articles that are going to follow this this watch around for a really long time. And The Verge, Lauren obviously experienced this, and it was a big part of her review. She had to give it a 5 out of a 10, which, I mean, is kind of crazy. I mean, it's just super unfortunate. This is like one of the key features of the device. And I'm convinced that this is just poor timing, poor, you know, combination of events, the release of the watch and this issue appearing for some people. But I mean, it's going to leave an effect on the internet. I don't know how much of an effect it's actually going to have on sales, though, because they're going to figure this out. I mean, it's not like Apple's not going to address this. They're working on it.
Yeah, I think we have to come up with a new name. I don't know, Starbucks Gate, McDonald's Gate.
Oh, yeah, we do need a new Panera gate. It's been a while since an Apple Gate.
Well, apparently, my question is, Before I read that other people didn't have this problem, I was like, did anyone take it to a McDonald's or a Starbucks? Does no one work? Like, does no one that works at Apple that had these review units go to Starbucks? Do they not do that? But apparently it might just be on like certain networks. It might be. Well, Apple says it's a software problem, so it's not.
Well, yeah. Right, because I don't know if it's necessarily relegated to when you're at a place like Panera or Starbucks or what, wherever your public Wi-Fi is. Because Lauren's even talking about, like, she tried to replicate, you know, being on a surfboard and taking a call. And she said even out there, it was experiencing issues. I don't know what it would be trying to connect with out there. There's no public Wi-Fi out in the ocean that I know of. but yet she was still, it was still exhibiting the same issues and just not connecting to LTE half the time. So it was, but she said in the end she was able to do it, and that was weird to make a phone call while surfing. Burke says, pro tip, test hardware before selling hardware. Easy for you to say. Hard is in the word hardware, mm-hmm. Burke.
Yeah, Burke.
It's hard. Harder than you think.
Yeah. I'm going to continue just taking and making phone calls in the shower, which I can currently do with this watch, which doesn't have cellular on it.
Okay. Do you want cellular on your watch? Like as you've kind of, as we've come closer to this watch shipping, I think it ships this Friday. Do you want this?
I want everything.
Oh, okay.
And I want it now. But no, if I wouldn't, I wouldn't buy a new watch, yeah. But I would put it to use. I mean, I go running a lot. It would be nice to be able to stay in touch without having to take my phone with me. My husband left his phone at home today, and I just, like, it gave me hives that he just, called, he was driving our kids to school, and I called them, and I was like, he left his phone at home, and they're like, it's fine. I'm like, it's not fine. Of course, I just emailed him, but he, unlike me, does not have this psychological addiction to his phone, which
yeah.
I feel like that might, you know, break that a little bit for me if I was able to, if I knew I could get phone calls if I needed to or text messages. I might leave my phone at home.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see kind of the battery implications over time, you know, as things kind of settle, as this gets figured out, if you're truly relying on LTE. Part of Lauren's review kind of pointed out that the exercise aspects of the watch were built around the idea that you're going to a gym, not necessarily that you're running for hours and hours on end with some of those features active, and that in that case, the battery life was pretty bad. It's been one of the big key things about this idea of bringing cellular connectivity into a watch is that you're just not going to get the battery life that as a user you think you should have on a watch, because it's a very battery hungry thing. I'm sure Apple's done a lot on software, and you know, that's part of what you were talking about, to kind of balance that. But ultimately people want a lot, you know, out of these devices, and a watch is a very small form factor. There's only so much they can do to pack a bunch of battery in there and to make those tweaks so that it lasts as long as you expect that it should. If you got LTE on board, that's going to be a challenge. So I'm curious to see how that pans out over time.
So you have used Android watches with LTE. Did you ever find a use case where you're like, oh, it's so awesome that this watch?
No. I mean, I don't, because like I just, and maybe it's one of those things where you have to kind of like buy into the idea of, like, it almost takes effort for me to say, I'm not bringing my phone with me because I'm so used to it, you know? And if I had a watch and I don't need my phone anymore because my watch does certain things that replicate the features of the phone, and it doesn't tether and everything like that. Like, that would be a serious reprogramming of my habit in order to do that. And some people are able to do that and go all in. I mean, anytime I tried to do that, I felt naked without my phone. And that's probably me more than the technology itself. But I'm fine bringing my phone around, because then when I actually do need it for something, I feel kind of dark right now. I don't know if it's that screen. If I actually need it to do something, it would, you know, I'd have it instead of not having it and being really screwed. So I don't know. What do you know? Nest just unloaded a bunch of new products. It's taken them a while. The Nest Secure Alarm System is designed as a fully fledged home security system that includes the Nest Guard Hub that will coordinate and control the rest of the connected components throughout the home. All these systems seem to have a hub. Now Nest has one. Those include the Nest Guard, which is an alarm system capable of an 85 decibel siren, complete with backup battery on board. Also the Nest Detect, for attaching to windows and doors to know when they open and when they close, who's passing through, that sort of stuff. Finally, the Nest Tag, which you can attach to important things like keys to make sure that they don't go missing. Nest also unveiled the Hello, which is a doorbell camera capable of face and person recognition, and the Nest Cam IQ Outdoor. Had a lot of products, by the way, an outdoor version of its Nest Cam product, IQ product that is also capable of facial recognition and two-way talk. Also going to get a Google Assistant capability built into that as well. So after all this time of waiting for Nest to do something, and I mean, they've had a handful of products here and there, but there have been so many complaints over the years as far as like, okay, you got them. Now what is your team doing? You know, very underproductive. They just came out of the gate and said, hey, check it out. We're going all in on this IoT thing. We don't just have a couple of products. We've got a whole system now.
Right. And the system that already exists, right? I mean, they have exactly what the Ring video doorbell has and Tracker, both of whom are our sponsors. And I'm not just saying because they are sponsors. The doorbell is very similar to the Ring. The floodlight cam is very similar to the Ring. And then, that tracking device is very similar to the Tracker. Mm-hmm. But this is all from Google. So, I mean, we'd have to try it to compare them to see if one is better or not, and do people feel wary of giving all, you know, of having Google be the heart of everything, you know, all of these cameras and, you know, who's coming in and out of your house and that sort of thing? Or do they feel more comfortable with a third-party company doing it?
I mean, I feel pretty confident that Nest creates good products, well-thought-out products. So if they're putting out, you know, a video camera doorbell, as they are, I'm sure it's going to be a great product, and I'm very interested to see them. What you bring up as far as like cameras all throughout your home, I mean, it's a very valid point, right? Like we're at a time right now where a lot of people are questioning how much information is passing from the user to big companies like Google that control so many different things. About our lives and have, you know, command over all of that stuff. Now that you've got connected cameras in all of these points, inside, outside, you know, this is all data that Google continues to kind of have in their control. And you have to ask yourself if you feel okay with that. Mm-hmm. Cost-wise, thank you for the reminder, Burke, Nest Secure, which is kind of like the security package, comes in around $499. Nest products have never been inexpensive. They've always been kind of on the premium price point. So $499 for that package this November. Pre-orders start today. And then some of the other things like the Nest Cam IQ Outdoor pre-order for $349 ships in November. I didn't write down all the prices on all of these things, but definitely look them up. Definitely a little more on the expensive side compared to other options.
I really wanted a smart couch. Like they've been teasing this event for a while.
Soon.
And I had all kinds of ideas what they might be coming up with. I wanted something totally different. And what I wanted was a couch that when I started to fall asleep during Netflix, it would pause the Netflix and turn into a bed.
Wow, you don't ask for much.
I don't ask.
And that seems like an obvious next step. I'm really actually now surprised that they didn't launch that. I'm guessing, you know, the way Nest works, probably another 4 years or so.
Yeah, probably. And they usually listen to me.
Yeah. That's how they run their business. This is Megan.
It really is one of those things where it's like, you see, if you watch the promotional video, you'll see all the happy children. They're eating watermelon, which equals happiness. And you know,
and I'm sure there's ukulele in there somewhere.
Right. They have their keys, they put it on the thing. And so, you know, but then if you look at that from a dystopian point of view, it's like, oh, those kids are being tracked everywhere. And, you know, you don't like, yeah, it just looks a little bit, you know, it's a little bit.
This is the world we live
scary.
In, Megan.
So now I don't know what we're watching, but it involves raccoons. So
it's not Google. It's not Google. You should be worried about. It's the raccoons.
Okay.
Obviously,
Facebook is clarifying its advertising policy after last week's discovery by ProPublica that users were able to self-identify as Jew haters, and then advertisers were able to target them because apparently even Jew haters need to buy stuff. In a post on her platform, CTO Sheryl Sandberg writes that they are tightening enforcement processes to make sure ad targeting terms don't violate Facebook's community standards. This includes targeting anyone based on their negative opinions based on race, ethnicity, national origin, religious affiliation, sexual orientation, sex, gender, or gender identity, or disabilities, or diseases. They also promised to add more human review to the automated processes, and they also are creating a program to encourage people on Facebook to report potential abuses of the Facebook ad system. So they've shut down what they called self-identifiers. So I think when we first reported this story, I thought that they were just taking words out of, you know, things that people have shared. But this is really people were saying, here, my interests are killing all Jews, you know, and so then they were using those interests to target because people had some bizarre interests. And also some offensive interests.
That users were posting onto their own
they
profiles.
They were saying, like, you know, I'm interested in insane clown posse and, you know, also Jew-hating. I mean, not that those two things are related. I'm not saying that. People can have varied interests. But so they shut it all down. And then now they're opening it back up. And so you can self-identify as a teacher or a student and or nurse, but not anything that is against the community standards. I think personally, all algorithms should assume that everyone is horrible and then work from there. Because, I mean, I think it's different than, like, you know, you want to teach your kids, like, assume everyone's good. Like, you know, just most people are good. But algorithms are not children, and I think we need to teach them, assume everyone's horrible, work from there, work from the exact worst thing someone could possibly do, and then build on that.
Yeah. I read something from Will Aramis in Slate. He posted an article about this, and it really resonated with me on this topic. And it's, you know, this idea of, and we, you know I do it all the time, we've definitely talked about it a lot on this show, about blaming the algorithm and being like, well, the algorithm made a bad decision and this is why we are where we are. It's easy to kind of get lost in the idea that there's a deeper problem there. It's not just this code that, you know, that randomly did this bad thing and, oh, well, we should correct the code and then yay, we've solved the problem. There are people and decisions and choices that are made that instruct that code and that brought that code to do the certain thing. There are systems put into place that either act as checks and balances for stuff like this or do not, for whatever reason. The tool itself that was coded to allow advertisers to be able to enter any keyword they wanted, and that included autocomplete. So, you know, part of that is if somebody on their profile put in this whole, you know, Jew hating thing, it would autocomplete that if you typed in the right string, and then you could target against that. That's a choice that people on the side of Facebook made, whether they understood what that would lead to or not. It's kind of up to them to check against that.
Right, and assume everyone's horrible.
Right. Yeah. So maybe it's not the algorithms necessarily that are to blame in that. It's just, you know, they just don't do a thorough job of creating these tools, you know, initially. And this isn't the only time that that's happened. They had the same similar decisions made around that whole housing discrimination thing that we talked about last year. The Russian ads that slipped past a team of humans in order to get posted and do all the crazy things that they probably did. You know, it's just kind of like one thing after another. So I recommend anyone watching interested in this topic to read the article by Will on Slate. It really rung true for me, anyways, from that perspective. A report in the Financial Times says that Amazon is hard at work on smart glasses that utilize Amazon's voice assistant technology. The glasses would reportedly bypass an earbud design, instead opting for bone conduction for the audio system. That's similar, actually, to what Google Glass did in their system. The glasses are expected to tether, at least initially anyways, the glasses are expected to tether to the smartphone wirelessly. They're meant to look like a normal pair of glasses. The new smart glasses could be unveiled along with an updated Echo product of some sort or a few in the lineup by the end of the year. not expected to have a screen or a camera. So those two things are off the table. So basically, if I understand this right, it's a pair of glasses that you can hear things through bone conduction that allows you to talk to Amazon's voice assistant. That's literally the only reason these exist, based on what I've read here, is that when you're out and about, you're wearing glasses that you can bark commands at. Is that it?
I guess that's it. But the upside is that the battery won't run out as
because
fast.
You're not powering a screen. Yeah. And you're not doing a camera and doing navigation and all this other stuff.
And then it might come out sooner because they can figure out how to do all that because they don't have a screen and they're okay. not wearing. So, yeah.
Who's going to wear these glasses? Who would ever wear an always on their face Echo?
I might.
Really? Do you need Echo all the time?
No, but I mean, I'm sure that they wouldn't create it until, you know, it's like, I might, no, I don't need it. I don't need it at all. You know, like, yes, order toilet paper. We could be having an argument and I could ask, you know, who was Alexander Hamilton the president or not? And then I could get that answer. No. Yeah, no, I don't need it.
I completely realize, like, I have a Google Glass at home. I got it when it first released, and there was a short period of time there in the course of my life where I was using it on a semi-regular basis. But yes, Burke made the point that you can do this all on the phone, and that's always kind of the thing that comes around, both on wearables, like watches even, and then, you know, the face computers is like, well, why do I need to wear the thing? At least if it looks like normal glasses, that's better. But
right.
I just don't understand, like, why you need Amazon's voice assistant everywhere you go.
I hope they call it a face computer. I don't know why that is. yeah, I mean, I think
basically what it is.
I don't know where this leaked out or if it was on purpose. I mean, I know we got it from the Financial Times, but I don't know if it was an on purpose leak. Like, hey, we're in this too. We have a wearable. Because they don't have a mobile OS like their competitors, you know, like Google or Amazon. You know, the spectacles have been, they were fun while they lasted.
Wow, that fizzled out fast.
I know no one who regularly uses them who actually bought some. So, I don't know. I mean, yes, no, I like having my my Echo Dots all over the house.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because I like to use them for house things,
right.
Like replenishing, you know, toilet paper and also listening to podcasts and stuff like that. But yeah, walking around in the street, I don't know.
I'm conflicted on this one. Apparently, the founder of Google Glass, Babak Parviz, is on the team for this project along with a number of other Glass researchers. So there's a lot of crossover here between what Glass was developed, you know, who Glass was developed by with Google and what you have here. So Financial Times also mentioned, by the way, a new Echo Protect security camera as a possible year-end product announcement. So Something's cooking in the Echo family, and we'll probably hear about it before the holidays. Maybe it's a pair of glasses that you might find under your Christmas tree. Don't know. Coming up, might HTC be on the cusp of a big googly announcement? We'll find out. But first, let's take a minute to thank the Ring Video Doorbell. They're the sponsor of this episode. Ring's mission is to make neighborhoods safer. Ring knows home security begins at the front door, but it doesn't end there. And that's why they're extending that same level of security to the rest of your home with the Ring Floodlight Cam. I have it raw down here. It's not insignificant. This is a nice, heavy-duty floodlight cam. You pop this outside your home, and you're going to be providing a lot of light to be able to light up the place. It has a motion-activated camera and floodlight that connects to your phone with HD video and two-way audio. It lets you know the moment anyone steps on your property. You can see and speak to visitors, even set off an alarm right from your phone. With Ring's floodlight cam, when things go bump in the night, you're going to immediately know what it is. And, you know, that's awesome when you're home. It's also awesome when you're away. That Ring floodlight cam is going to let you keep an eye on your home no matter where you are. Ring floodlight cams offer the ultimate in-home security with high visibility floodlights and a powerful HD camera that puts security in your hands. Named the Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017 as well. You can monitor every corner of your property, by the way, with a Ring of Security kit. All kits include a Ring Video Doorbell. I'm opening up my Ring Video Doorbell right now. Let's see here. Oh, there it is. This is what we got right on the front door. Ring Video Doorbell right here. Your choice of either one, two, or three of the floodlight cams that I just showed you. a few moments ago. You connect your Ring Video doorbell with your favorite smart locks and hubs for even more added convenience, monitoring, and security. It's all about the Internet of Things, providing all these points to keep your home even more secure. With Ring, you're always home. Save up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/TNT. That's ring.com/TNT. And we thank Ring for their support of Tech News Today. More and more signs are now pointing to a pending shift in HTC's future, and it sounds likely that Google might actually be in the mix. Joining us to discuss this is Ryan Whitwam, who wrote an article on the topic for Android Police. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's awesome to get you on. So HTC made a big change, I think it was today, related to the trading of its stock. Explain what happened there, what that seems to be signaling anyways.
So HTC, which is based in Taiwan, they announced that trading of their shares would be suspended tomorrow, Thursday, which is just a couple of hours away there now, I think. And they didn't announce why. They just said some major thing was happening. And so, of course, everybody assumed that it was related to an acquisition, probably Google, which has been rumored, you know, on and off for at least a year or two, and more intensely just over the past few weeks. And there were a few other leaks, you know, not sourced, but, you know, people familiar with the matter say that it's Google. Which would make sense. There aren't really a lot of companies who would have an interest in picking up all or part of HTC. So what we're expecting is, if it is a Google acquisition, they probably will not be taking the whole company. They will take the part that makes phones. So Google could get, supply chain and facilities, manufacturing outfits, and things like that. But possibly the HTC name would remain with HTC, the entity that exists right now, and they would continue to make things, the Vive headset and, you know, other non-phone items, I suppose. So HTC could just cease to exist as a smartphone maker because Google wouldn't have the name. They would just sort of use the stuff that HTC used to have making phones to make Google phones.
And then control a lot of the production chain that goes into it because, I mean, as we believe to know, as we have picked up over many leaks that have happened, including yesterday's big leak around the Pixel 2, is that HTC is involved with at least the smaller of the Pixel devices. HTC did last year's Pixel devices as well. Is that the advantage here, that it basically puts Google in control of its own destiny as far as its hardware is concerned?
Well, being able to have a vertically integrated product does give you more control. I think Google showed that even having HTC do it last year, they were able to make something pretty great with the Pixel. Even to this day, I think it is the most consistently fast Android phone that you can get. I think HTC and their financial situation has, in some ways, it's backed Google into a corner. Because obviously, if the rumors are true, we have every reason to believe they are, that HTC is making a Pixel phone this year. If HTC is like, hey, Google, thing about that, we're probably going to go out of business. What is Google going to do? Like, they need that phone to exist. Yeah. So I get they either invest a bunch of money in HTC or they just buy a big chunk of HTC. And it's a different situation for Google now than it was back in like 2011 when they bought Motorola. And now Google has a hardware division and it's actually headed by Rick Osterloh, the former CEO of Motorola. So Google could sort of take all these assets from HTC into itself, and maybe it'll be, you know, technically Alphabet that's acquiring Google, or that's acquiring HTC, and then the, you know, all this stuff will just sort of be a separate entity inside Alphabet, and Google will have access to it. But however, you know, the specifics work out, Google is in a position to actually use these assets in a way that they weren't when they bought Motorola.
So the way you describe this, it sounds sort of like they're doing it out of necessity because they don't want HTC to go out of business. Is it possible that they would be doing this in the future? Like, is this a sign of things to come where they'll continue to buy up hardware companies?
I would think that Google doesn't want to have to. But they've never really been set up to make their own hardware before. And it's possible that acquiring HTC would give them what they need going forward. And hopefully there aren't Android OEMs that are crashing and burning every few years. That would probably be...
Although you never know. In this day and age.
I mean, HTC's fortunes really turned around there. I mean, they made the first Android phone in 2008, and they were a big player for a long time. But I mean, just this year, I mean, the U11 was a good phone. I think if you look at it in a vacuum without considering the other things that are out there, it's a fine phone. People could carry it and be happy with it. But the demand has already dropped off, and HTC's revenue at this point is 50% lower than it was last year at this time. And last year wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's dropped something like 90-some-odd percent. Their stock value has dropped 90-some-odd percent since 2011, when they were kind of at their peak, which is just so dramatic and so unfortunate. I've always loved HTC's kind of design aesthetic. But that hasn't resonated in recent years. A lot of competition on the higher end devices in that same category.
I think they made some errors in judgment in the 2014-2015 era. They made some phones that had pretty obvious hardware problems and gimmicky features that people didn't really buy into, and they may have burned a lot of the goodwill that they had before that.
Right.
So. You know, even though like the HTC 10 last year, I liked that phone. I thought it was a very nice phone. But they haven't been able to get carrier deals for the last 2 years. Right now, you can only get the U11 on Sprint, and Sprint will take pretty much anything. You know, no offense to the Essential phone.
Oof, man, that was a rough burn. I know that with the Pixel phone, from what we're hearing anyways, is that like last year. I mean, was it exclusive to Verizon last year as far as carrier availability was concerned?
Yeah,
I'm hearing that now Verizon, this year, too.
Yeah, Verizon was the only carrier you could buy from directly, but the Google Store had it, and they had payment plans on the Google Store. So, you know, you could get it in a sort of carrier-ish way, which I think kind of saved the phone from being, you know, kind of just, you know, a showboat thing for Google.
Right.
It was actually something people could buy. And so... the HTC phones right now, if you're not on Sprint and you want to buy a U11... You go to HTC's website and pay $700 for it, and that's just how it is. Nobody should do that right now, though. By the way, don't do that.
Probably not a good idea. Why would Vive not be part of this? Because when I think about it, you know, Facebook has Oculus. They have their premium VR platform. Google, I feel like, could totally, you know, use Vive. They've got their smartphone VR platform. Why not have a premium in the Vive? I guess maybe it's just that HTC isn't interested because that's actually doing okay.
I feel like, you know, I'm not really sold on the way that desktop VR works right now as a long-term proposition. But it's possible that Google would totally be interested in taking that.
Yeah.
But HTC sees it as something that, even if it's not pulling in a ton of money right now, it's something that could in the future, and it is at least still a product that investors are willing to throw money at, which is not something you can say for HTC's phones.
Right. But Google might be. When are we likely to know more about this? Did they actually say that they have an announcement, a big announcement to make tomorrow, or is that
They said a pending announcement, and don't usually stop trading of your stock, you know, a week or two before you make your big announcement, especially HTC, which can't really take any more hits to its stock price. So I imagine we will find out this week what is going on. You know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Ryan Whitwam, you write for a couple of publications. This article, of course, was in Android Police. Where would you like to point people to find all the work that you do online?
You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Whitwam. I will post all sorts of things there. Sometimes just keyboards and not related to phones, but whatever you want to check out.
Right on, Ryan. It's great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us and talking about this today. We appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, Ryan. No problem. Anytime.
All right. Have a good night.
We got some feedback.
Yes, we usually do.
Mm-hmm. Mark writes, in episode 1856, your guest, James, sound quality was awful. It was breaking up and shuddering. I'm surprised you didn't hear it on your side. It looked like he was using a wireless headset, so maybe he should have been wired or his Skype connection was bad. Yes, Mark, it was bad. And you got to see the edited version, I'm guessing, because just if you want a little behind the scenes, we usually reach out to our guests on the day of, and we send them nice emails asking them to come on because we love their work. And we ask them to be on a Wired connection. And sometimes they say they don't know if they can be. And then I do something like this, which if you're only listening, I'm crossing my fingers and shutting one eye, hoping that it's going to work out. And yesterday it really didn't work out. And so we probably should have stopped down because most of you probably listen. There's probably more of you listening than watching. We probably should have just shown a picture of him for those of you watching and just gotten his audio so it could be better. Because we know that, oh, bad audio just stinks. Yeah. Like, it drives everyone crazy. So we apologize. We thank Kevin for editing as much as he could out of, because I'm sure what you heard was not nearly as bad as what we heard. But, and we thank James Martin from CNET for his time and his beautiful photos. If you were only listening, go check out the video because we did show a lot of his portrait work. And so that will be worth it. Just you can shut your ears. So thank you for writing in, and we will do better.
Yeah, it's our continuing effort to kind of, you know, learn from things like that. Sometimes it just happens. We just have to take what we have. But we loved getting James on. I just kind of feel bad for James a little bit because, I mean, he jumped through so many hoops to get us to that point and everything. So, you know, we didn't want to bail on it entirely. So we were happy to have him along. Next time it'll be better. TNT's fan of the day is Ed Little, who emailed this picture saying he's watching and making hamburgers. Look at that. Dang. Those are some bulky hamburgers. Well, that's a flat hamburger. It's the same. It's just flattened. Good work. Who are you feeding?
It looks like an industrial
kitchen. Yeah, I didn't take a look at the nacho cheese in the background. There's chili. You're really jumping in on all these points, aren't you? So we've got some chili. We've got me in mid-sentence. We've got a spray can of oil, other things. Cool. Now it's dinner time.
What you didn't see is right after that, he took the tablet and stuck it on the griddle just to see what would happen.
Ooh, the tablet's already flat. You don't need to flatten that with a spatula.
Added some ketchup to it.
Don't eat your tablet. That's a bad idea. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. You can post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we're going to find it.
Equifax wants the institution that we all trusted with all of our personal financial information is now simply the subject of the ridiculous story we save for the end of the show. The Verge reports that in a series of tweets, Equifax was accidentally directing ID theft victims to a phishing website. The Equifax Twitter account directed customers to securityequifax2017.com instead of what Equifax had set up, which was equifaxsecurity2017.com. This lasted for a few weeks before the tweets were finally deleted. Lucky for us or anyone who followed those links on Twitter, the site wasn't malicious. It was created, the one that was Security Equifax 2017 was created by Nick Sweeting. He's a full stack developer and he wanted to expose the vulnerabilities. He wanted to show that Equifax should not have had people entering all their personal information on a domain other than Equifax. Just another domain, how easy it would be for someone to mistype and then someone to buy up this website. So the good news is that Cloudflare pretty quickly marked Nick's site as a phishing site. So they caught on before Equifax caught on. So thank you, Cloudflare, for that. What a mess.
Equifax, always at the back of the line, always the last to realize what it's done. I don't know what else to say about Equifax at this point. It's just kind of lame that it keeps happening. That stupid stuff keeps happening. Get your act together.
Mm-hmm.
Wag finger. Mm-hmm. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us. It's tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and you can find us on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
Subscribe to the show. You can find all the ways to subscribe. However you decide to subscribe, we do not judge audio, video, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher.
Oh, that photo was from so long ago.
I know. And those were our younger years.
The salad days.
The salad days. just subscribe and tell your friends. And if you want to tweet at me about whether or not you agree that algorithms should just assume that everyone is horrible and work for that from there, I am at Megan Maroney.
Oh, you're so hearing from people on that one.
I hope so. It's kind of the way I figure out if people get all the way to the end of the show. I got a few different comments on Earballs yesterday, so thank you to those of you who made it all the way.
You were listening to the important part where mm-hmm. we said Earballs. Mm-hmm. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Kevin for editing and for switching the show as TD. Thanks to Burke for helping in the studio and occasional Burke chat. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.